wrestling this.
Well, I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania.
Welcome to Barnstorming.
Welcome to Barnstorming. Here we are. Is that yeah, the intro?
This is a fun show, artisanal podcasting about organizing politics and culture in central Pennsylvania broadly. We have a great show today. My name is Taylor Lightman. I just earned my Master of Disaster Risk Management in Lund, Sweden. I used to do some politics and happy to be here with my co-host, Jordy.
Oh, thanks, Taylor. I mean, used to do politics. I think still do.
Still do. Don't politics.
You? Yeah, that's true. You are the Master of Disaster. I wanted to give you another title, which is you're also the unofficial spokesman for Caviar in a Tube. We learned recently that this is apparently Sweden has got such a great economy that caviar is the food of the masses. Is that right?
I don't think they can call it caviar because it's roe.
Oh, okay.
Kalles is the name of it.
Oh, okay. All right. Excellent.
Which is short for Carl's, or it's Kalles is abbreviation for Carl.
Yep. So this is definitely a special show. We're going to take a deep dive into women's health, reproductive justice. We've got Jess, who's of course a regular, and we have a new guest who we'll introduce in a moment. We're hoping also Jess will talk about this later, but this might also be a launching pad, this show, for bringing more people together in our broad region to work on and do leadership and advocacy for these issues about reproductive justice, women's health, women's sexuality, not just women. All people, because of course, I think we all know issues about LGBTQ equality and equity intersect with those other topics. But I wanted to throw it to Jess next. She's a returning champion, of course, one of our favorite guests on the show, and also little known fact: 7-time champion in the Columbia County fastest eye roll after a stupid comment. So she's really good at that. Jess, tell us about yourself.
No, I think you said it all right there. I don't really know what else I would have to.
Oh, there goes the Masters champion. Yeah.
That really covers it. I don't know. Is there more I should add?
What are you? You know, you've been very busy with. You have some news about your. You know, you did a lot with Columbia County Indivisible that became part of Columbia Montour Action Together. Do you want to say anything? You've always been on the board for Action Together NEPA. Now you have a new role?
No, I haven't always been on the board. I was with the leadership of what became the Columbia County chapter and then joined the board in 2020. And yeah, I guess I do have news. I'm now the president of the board for Action Together. So that's an exciting development. Exciting to be representing Columbia County within regional organization, showing that it's not just Luzerne and Lackawanna counties. It's not just about Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, that we've got people all over the place in the progressive movement. So I'm excited about that.
Awesome.
Congratulations. And
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that you will build on the fine tradition there of all the great things they've been doing. Jess was kind enough to invite her friend and somebody we've known a little bit, and we're super happy to hear more. We've got Kate DePasquale, who, among other things, is also a veteran carpetbagger for justice across battleground states all up and down the East Coast. Tell us about yourself, Kate.
Thank you for that warm introduction. I would also say that Jess is not the only one excited to see her taking new responsibilities. We're all really, really excited in this community. I grew up in Columbia County, which she's supported in myriad ways. I've also done organizing in this area. That's sort of the Pennsylvania part of the battleground state. Also New Hampshire for Kamala Harris, Georgia for Mike Bloomberg, and most recently as a writer and general politico and comms person for organizations like Mission Control doing direct mail. Really, really excited to look at the challenges we have locally around reproductive health care because there's an opportunity to move the needle. I'm really excited to talk to you guys about what you're thinking.
I see what you did there, reproductive health care needle. That's That's fine work.
No, Jordy, that was not intentional. Not even a little bit.
I mean, who's to say what intention is? One thing, as usual, because we're nothing if not completely put together at barnstorming, is Kate, if you see stuff in the chat, usually we're using it just to kind of help us sort of stay on task. I know that I've fallen into the trap of like being in the middle of a sentence and seeing it and being like responding to it. So don't feel like you need to sort of respond to what's in the chat. We're going to do something here that we hope to come back to, but hopefully all of us are going to say a little something because about the places we're from in Pennsylvania or where we are or other sort of fun geographic facts. Could be anything really, but it was interesting listening to when you were talking, Jess, about Columbia and Luzerne and Lackawanna. And, I am a transplant to Pennsylvania, happy to be so. For me, I know exactly where that is, right? But if we're getting more listeners from other parts of Pennsylvania or other states, or even we've looked at our analytics, got a lot of Swedish listeners. I wonder why.
And Israeli.
And Israeli. Those are
cornering
our two top,
the Swedish market.
Yeah, we've got the Swedish,
on
Israeli.
Pennsylvania politics news.
Right.
Yeah, that is Israel is our third most listened to country. We're not really sure what's up with that.
I don't know what's going on.
I love it.
But Columbia, Luzerne, and Lackawanna are three contiguous counties that are Columbia is more central, moving into Northeast PA. Anyway, so here's my fun little fact. So I live in Lewisburg, and Lewisburg was the home to one Thaddeus Mortimer Fowler, 19th century cartographer. That's a great name, by the way. I just love Thaddeus. There's another famous Thaddeus who was a radical Republican abolitionist, Thaddeus Stevens, who was from Pennsylvania. But Thaddeus Mortimer Fowler, you might have seen his work. You know those kinds of panoramic maps? Lewisburg has one done of it because he lived here. But there are these maps from the 19th century that look like they were done from a drone, or obviously they weren't done from a drone. You know what I'm talking about? Like, they're sort of common.
I've seen the one you're talking about. It's awesome.
Seen the one I'm talking about. It is awesome, and it's super detailed. So he lived in Lewisburg for about 4 years. He was a Civil War photographer and a Civil War veteran. And the thing I learned today that I love is I always thought he must have used a balloon, because if you've seen these maps, and there's famous ones of more, he was a great self-promoter, like other Lewisburgers, Taylor. I was probably thinking about myself, but anyway, and they look so vibrant, and there's these little details, and like I can see my house, and you can see what's now like what was then a factory that's now still exists and is an indoor like kiosk market, flea market. Anyway, he did all of them without a balloon. I always thought maybe he had a balloon. They're so good at seeming three-dimensional, but apparently he was just such a good artist. And it's cool to think, right, that like we look at it and we can't imagine that he could imagine what it would look like as an aerial view. So anyway, that's my fun fact. Who wants to go next?
Well, I'm happy to, because there's nothing I love more than your art history lessons, Jordy. But second to that, talking about my hometown, talking about our area and what makes it so special, because understanding that's kind of a key to understanding how we surmount some of our greatest challenges. I grew up at Berwick, Pennsylvania, is, you know, famous for Wise potato chips today, used to be famous for its great downtown. This is an area with a lot of old factories in the textile industry that are no longer operational. That industry has been replaced by things like Saksui SBI, the plastics manufacturer over in Bloomsburg. We have some great employers in this area, some really, really cool industry, but the character of this area has changed. And understanding how we move into the future and make this community as vibrant as it once was and clearly can be is so exciting. But what we are here to talk about today is actually really, really deeply integrated with all of that. The reputation of this area is built on a lot of pride. There's a rich Italian-American history in Berwick that I'm quite proud of myself as a deep Pasquale. And we have a lot that we can build on, but it won't happen without Jordy. I'm kidding. It won't happen without it won't happen without us having conversations like this.
Oh my God. Jess, yeah, I think you trained her too well. No, that's totally, I'm glad you said the thing about the factories, because one thing I find that people don't understand about rural PA often, and I'd be curious if other rural areas, but we're really a post-industrial landscape. And I think sometimes people who come from other places don't see, you know, they think of Detroit or parts of, you know, the New Jersey suburbs of Philly or parts of Philly, but there are, you know, between canals and railroads and other things. And, sometimes we don't see it. So Jess,
it's totally true. How many people have you fought about or fought with about whether we count as Rust Belt? I mean, it's, you have to fight people on it, but the character is the same.
Mm-hmm. Jess, have you got a fact about where you're from, where you live, anywhere you've lived?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was born, well, in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania.
I didn't know that.
Really? I didn't know that.
You're more Lewisburg than me.
Yeah. I was born there and then really grew up in the Bloomsburg area. I, you know, had some political organizer aspirations. So lived then in the Lancaster Harrisburg area for a while and decided that there weren't enough, you know, political opportunities there. So I came back to Bloomsburg, no, that's not true. That's not how that went.
I mean, I was kind of laughing. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, no. Ended up back here.
I think Bloomsburg means opportunities in Serbo-Croat.
You know, that sounds right. That sounds right. No, so just ended up back here and have really taken advantage of the fact that there's a really great community in a lot of these small towns and they should be connected to each other. And we need to find ways to do that because, you know, little towns working together to just make the region stronger and more progressive and more inclusive is how it's going to get done. And I think, you know, Kate's point about being a, you know, factory towns and a lot of industry has left here and it has left a lot of people behind. And I think we do ourselves and the progressive movement a disservice if we try to look past that. And I think that just gives us opportunities to reach out to people and talk to them about what they really need and how we can make their lives better just through the building of community, because it's so important.
Great. Great. Awesome. Thank you. Taylor, cool. you got something?
I do. I think mine's a little different from your guys's, but so I am from Winfield, Pennsylvania, which is just south of Lewisburg. That's where
suburb.
I think they would contest that. My house is in East Buffalo Township, which is sort of the more suburban agricultural region just outside of Lewisburg. But it's technically in Winfield, and most of Winfield is in Union Township. And the township line, like, basically cuts off, like, a very small portion of my neighborhood. And so, like, 90% of the neighborhood is in Union Township, and then my 10% is in East Buffalo Township, which is so complicated and makes that both townships underserve my neighborhood. And I think it's just one of these very interesting Pennsylvania things that we are just so divided by municipalities. And I think that, like, a listener from Iowa or California would just, like, not totally get, like, how many different small political boundaries we deal with in Pennsylvania. And I'll say one thing, like, I think it sometimes helps us in forming local identities, but I think it ultimately sometimes really hurts us in achieving things because we're so fragmented.
For sure.
Can I just say on that, like, Kate being from Berwick, Pennsylvania is another, like, perfect example of that, where it's its own municipality, but then it's divided in the weirdest way between two different counties. And it just wreaks all kinds of havoc on people who live in Berwick. And it's just always a mess.
Both there in is. Terms of like getting resources and being serviced as a community, but also in terms of, like, emergency management and, like, I don't know, and like political representation.
I'm really glad that you highlight that, Taylor, because it's also to do with mobilizing people to resolve community problems. It's also to do with people deciding how to organize themselves and how to get involved politically, how to understand the systems and access to resources that they may already have. There are structures out there that people just don't understand because they seem convoluted. And, you know, a program like this has an opportunity to expose some of that. And I'm really excited to see how you unpack that over some of the issues we're going to talk about.
Oh my God, Kate, you've been given false information about our ability to be either intelligent, coherent, or problem solve on this show. But thank you for the efforts. For sure.
Tell her you were going to solve all the problems by the end of the episode.
All right. That's excellent.
Okay. How much time do you have, Seth?
Yeah, exactly. So Taylor's story, and we, you know, this is something I feel like we could revisit in future episodes, but that fragmentation, it would be really interesting to sometime get somebody from another, you know, somebody who knows another rural state, because my hunch is it's more intense here than in other places. I know where I grew up in Tennessee, outside of in Knox County, and you'll hear my accent come out. It just happens, all right, when I start to think about Tennessee. But anyway, I grew up in Knoxville.
Tennessee, I hear you calling me.
I don't know that song. But
we'll put it in the show notes, guys.
All right.
I'm not crazy.
Anyway, real quick, like Knox County, which is pretty big, outside of the main city of Knoxville and one or two others, I think the whole rest of the county is all under one county governmental structure, right? Whereas in Pennsylvania, within the small county of Union County, only 40,000 people, I forget how many, and I'm a local official, I think there's 12 or 14 townships or something like that. Is that right, Taylor?
I don't know either.
Anyway, the point is, yeah. And so like this, in my head, this like at the tectonic level, right? We have tectonic fracturing, right? So that just kind of popped into my head, but like we have political geographic tectonic fracturing, like that's sort of an underlying feature that affects everything in the ways that you guys said. So we're going to pivot here. And Jess and I share, although she has far more experience, we both worked in the hospitality industry. And I think she may have, like, just because I think this is going to be great. You know, you hear amazing things if you work in a kitchen or in a restaurant. So do you have something, you know, heard in the kitchen or the restaurant this week? I know you shared something on Facebook that cracked me up.
Yeah. I kind of feel like maybe we just go with that as the starting point because it's so good. There was something that I found on social media somewhere that was like, it was everyone really kung fu fighting was the question. Right. Mm-hmm. And then somebody was like, even the Grinch, like what, that doesn't seem likely. And I am not joking even a little bit. That is a conversation that has happened in the restaurant kitchen, because, you know, you're listening to music. There's not a lot of intellectual stimulation. So you just start paying attention to very random things. So it's been like, you know, and again, was everyone kung fu fighting? Like that seems like a stretch. Was no one taking a break? Like how was that structured?
I can totally picture this.
Go deep.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Go deep.
I'm already there. Cause I'm like, would the Grinch have had time to learn kung fu? I mean, he was very busy, you know, making that sled and that outfit stealing, for Max the dog.
Stealing gifts and whatnot. And then, like, I mean, it's other conversations, you know, like classic rock is just really, really lends itself to these discussions. Like, listen to the music all the time. Like, is that, like, that's not feasible, right? Like, if you're doing something, what if you're watching TV? You also have to be listening to the music. You know, if you're working, you can't always be listening to music. And, like, it goes deep. Like, through the whole song, like the next song can come on and like there's still a discussion going on about what's happening, and it's just, and then you step back and you're like, how long did we just spend on that? Mm-hmm. As you're doing all kinds of other things. So it's constantly entertaining.
Yeah,
I gotta say, Jess, I don't think that that's a experience unique to the kitchen or the kitchen of a restaurant for that matter. I think a lot of people are probably identifying with that experience as they're staying home a little too much, often by themselves and listening to the radio in new and exciting ways.
That sounds so interesting. Like, what does it sound like in the fridge?
Or maybe
there's only so many ways to listen to a radio, Kate.
You're yeah, like, right.
What will happen if I put it in the shower?
Or perhaps just shower radio is the lyrics.
Yeah, I was picturing not the shower radio, but one, you know,
like just taking a radio into the shower. That mm-hmm. seems fraught.
Yeah, if I turn up really loud and go to the basement,
that's not recommended by the show.
Yes, that's right.
Don't not endorsed. Not endorsed.
Not endorsed.
You know, radios don't come with that little tag like a hairdryer does.
That's true.
Saying you can't take it in the bathtub. Just
that's
saying.
True. That's true. Oh, that's hilarious. So, Kate, we got a little bit. You know, do you want to just because. We've got some time here. Do you want to tell us a little bit more? I actually have one question, which I may stick my foot in my mouth in a second, but like, because I've heard you talking about, you know, working for different campaigns, I have the impression or the feeling that you had another career before politics. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. Okay. I worked in corporate America. I had a lot of really exciting jobs working in, usually as an executive assistant or a project manager. So I got to do massive hiring projects. I got to do remodels of offices. I got to manage large donor databases or, you know, really you name it. I had a lot of fun. But when it was time to settle down and do what I love, that meant politics and that meant helping good candidates. That meant helping, you know, good causes. So
that's what was like the watershed moment where you're like, I need to like pivot to a different like career?
I think when you find that you're spending 90% of your time out of the office listening to NPR, that's the turning point. or that's rather
that's a lot of NPR.
You've got a lot of tote bags.
Let's pretend I didn't throw out a percentage then. but yeah, when you realize you're becoming more knowledgeable about another space than the one you're working in, you know that it's time to make a transition. Also, when you
that's
realize
really good, working, you could write a like career change book.
Well, like, another
what color's you another your parachute? Signifier. Yeah.
Another signifier is when you're working 40-hour weeks at your day job and 40-hour weeks in politics.
Oh.
But those
interesting.
Are the
did you hear
week?
That, Jess?
Yeah, yeah. What? I'm sorry. What?
Yeah. Oh, the blue headphones stopped working for a sec.
If you're working just as much outside of your day job,
way more outside of my day job than yeah. I do at my day job. But anyway,
when your I night job about, when your night job is your that. Day job,
yeah.
Kate, I think I can see a career like I don't know. This was in the '90s. What Color's Your Parachute was a big like what to do with your life book, but you know
they still create editions.
Oh, okay.
Yes, they do.
Oh. So it was recommended to me in the '90s because I'm also somebody who wonders what I should do when I grow up, and I still haven't read it.
that's why you're still trying to figure it out. You have a freaking book.
Oh my God! You know, I know we're going to get to sort of deep into you know women's health, and I just said such a male thing, right? Like I haven't read the owner's manual yet. oh, so good.
I am curious. So you decided to like shift into politics, and was like working for the Harris campaign the first thing that you did, or was there like a precursor to that? Or
the first thing I did is follow Jess around like a puppy and ask her what she was doing and where I could get involved. Just kidding. I was very heavily involved with the PA Dems in 2016 and 2018. I managed to bring in a lot of volunteers in 2018. That to me was the moment where I realized that I added value to an organization like that because people really want that access point. And if you can be a person who shows them what it looks like to be involved, and if you can either model that, explain that, or invite them, any of those three things, it's so powerful.
So
I just have to agree with you really quickly. And I've been
I
a
just said
time
I have one more question and then we're going to move on.
I know.
All right.
Now I have another question now.
No. All right. Okay. Fine. I have no control over this. Go ahead, Taylor.
I think you're exactly right about like the importance of like at the ground level, just modeling what it means to be like engaged politically to people that want to get more involved or have like 2 hours on a Saturday that they have.
That's right.
And they want to like spend it. That's like right. efficiently.
Getting involved looks different for everyone.
And I feel like to like we often ask like people that want to be involved, like in politics professionally, at least from my perspective, I felt this way as a field organizer, that I was being asked to do too much to do it well. And I really if we could just get back in 2022 into the quality mentality of it, that's, I don't know if you have any feelings about that.
Well, that's, my heart goes out to you hearing that. And we, you know, we all have that experience when we have such strong motivation to do good. And what we want is to share that with other people and bring them in. So that's a whole other episode talking about self-care, talking about what it means to be sustainable in a movement. And I nominate that for a future discussion, but, I believe Jordy had a question. I don't know if you might have.
So you're such a pro, Kate. I think Jess said she had a question, so I'm going to defer to her.
Yeah, I was just kidding.
Oh
yeah.
All right. Well, I do have one, and it follows on a little bit from this really, it's really great to hear both of you all talk because, you've both been sort of directly working, in campaigns in different roles. But this actually follows on, and maybe this will be a bit of a series. We had Nick Presley several episodes ago. And Nick shared his part of his story, which is fascinating. And he's a formerly incarcerated person and then started working in politics. And we asked him like, were there similarities about, and he was incarcerated for the drug business, shall we say, the illegal one. Like, are there a key similarity or a key difference between some of the work you did in corporate America and stuff you've been doing, either on the political campaign side or on the kind of movement grassroots side?
Well, I think it's always fun for me when people ask, how I made, sort of a transition or how did I get from A to B? Because those are all the same skills. Caring about people, understanding what people need because you've listened to them, a little bit of that customer service. What it really means is that you're paying attention to people, problems, and coming up with solutions and actions that you can take. So if you learn how to be effective and efficient in, it doesn't matter if it's in the corporate world, it doesn't matter if it's a volunteer thing that you did. Those are the skills that make a good public servant and a good activist and a good organizer. Whether you choose to do that because you love to be the face of an organization or whether you choose to do that because you want to be in the background making things happen, there's a place for you and you can get involved in your community.
And is there something that's like a big difference?
The big difference is just what motivates you? What's your driver? Do you have a certain area or product that you're super excited about is not a different question than is there a certain politician that motivates you that you can see is ready to create the future that you're excited about too? Those are really similar questions when you decide where do I want to spend my energy? What wakes me up in the morning? What gets me out of bed? And what makes me have a good, effective day? Like if you're trying to choose your parachute, those are important things to think about. And for me, I know where I am today.
No, that's great. You might not have heard me say this, but it's something I've been thinking about and saying more recently, which is a difference, is the movement doesn't have an HR department.
So true.
Yeah. So we won't go further into that, but what's the word I'm looking for? the authenticity of your laugh reveals that you understand it quite deeply immediately.
I do, but I also feel super fortunate. I'm learning from professionals in political organizing spheres. People like Brandon Chatterton and others who put on like amazing organizations and conferences like Democratic Gain and you know, Amy Pritchard. Like, there are people who are trying to create that, who are really exciting models for what's possible and what has worked. So that's, again, Jordy, a whole other podcast that we could get into. We have a lot to dig
in. Yeah, we do. Mostly every podcast here is basically the setup for more podcasts. So totally true. Perfect. Well, we're going to just a few show notes, and I'll try and keep, and maybe Taylor can help me keep this short, because we, you know, as usual, the introductions have gone a little bit long, but that's okay because people are so interesting. One is, we have another podcast coming up very quickly. We're going to have Katie Bloom and Jillian Kratzer. Katie works for PA Conservation Voters, and Jillian works for SEIU.
Conservation Voters at PA.
Conservation Voters at PA. Thank you.
And we're going to talk about the budget, the PA budget.
Absolutely. So check that out. We're having a new series that's gotten underway. It's called Black Voices Matter, Tales from the Rural Uprising. The first one came out about a week ago. And I know I've reached out to some people, but if you hear this, and the idea is to do an oral history of, the Black Lives Matter and racial justice, events, especially across rural PA and small towns. So if you're interested in that, or you'd like to be part of that, it's a different format because it's much more of an interview with one or two people. Just reach out to us. We still have our, we'd love to get feedback from our listeners. So if you go to bit.ly and then Barnstorming PA Forum all together, that'll take you right to that. We're hoping to get to the point that only 20% of the respondents are our mothers. And we're not quite there yet.
We're not there yet.
We're not there yet. So we can really, really use some help there. Although I'll say, while the moms are supportive, they also give some good feedback. And speaking of feedback, Taylor, should we do just a quick something we got from one of our listeners, or do you think we should leave that for another time?
Let's leave that for tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah.
We're short on time.
Sure. Any other housekeeping? Oh, I've got one small thing. But go ahead, Taylor.
I can't think of anything. I mean, rate and review the show. Share our content on social media. Please do.
Now I know why all the other, the real podcasters, I don't know why I'm saying real, the more professional ones are constantly harping on that.
It does help.
Two small things. Totally stealing another page from John Lovett. I think Taylor and I this weekend, and maybe Jess, if you heard Love It or Leave It, we realized that Taylor and I are something like professional podcasters, I guess. And that means that we have the same job both as Barack Obama and Rudy Giuliani. So I don't even know how to feel about that. It's just a real mix of emotions.
And John Lovett.
Well, that, you know, this is, whole project is just so I can get on John Lovett's show. That's what this is about. That's the same. Secret agenda. Yeah, same. But Taylor and I, I had to explain to my kids last night, when two people spend a lot of time together and have some deep affection, sometimes something magical happens and they can create, you know, a new legal person, a new legal person. So Taylor and I, we are officially Barnstorming PA LLC. I even teared up a little bit yesterday. Jordy did cry.
Can I be serious for like half a second and then I'll stop for sure? Like, absolutely. I'm really proud of you guys. That's awesome. Like, I know that's been a goal for a long time. So props. Very excited.
Thank you. I don't know why I got a little teary. Part of it is maybe because of having been a management professor. I'm sort of, although this is more true than you would think, I'd never started a company. I started other organizations, but not a company. So anyway, we will refrain from any more bad jokes, except for this one, which is, we do think we're uniquely qualified to better understand what women go through, because now we've given birth.
It was a 3-year labor, though, you know.
I'm pretty sure that I vetoed that joke in Slack, but
that's true.
Show.
You didn't read about the Constitution of Barnstorming and the veto override. So
I didn't. That's my bad. Yeah, that's my bad.
All right. So we're going to do headlines. So we're going to do it like we usually do it. Everybody tell us your headline. You can do a quick hot take on anybody's, and then we'll see if there's some conversation after it. We didn't pick an order. Somebody ready to go first? All right, I'll go. mine is Rachel Levine, Portrait of Grace Under Fire.
I'm going to unmute myself for snaps.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
100%.
Taylor?
Mine is would be is going to be more of an expose, like the title of an expose. And it's the many indignities of work.
You're really going, I mean, I like this. I want to encourage it. Like I was teasing you earlier, but you're really going into the, like, tell me more, leave them wanting more style of headlines.
Well, that's the point, right? So, I mean, I can go into it if you want, but.
Well, I don't have a hot take because I still don't know what it is, but we'll
see. But Taylor, back. Now I want more.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. Quick.
So on the next podcast. No, just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
The next podcast is the indignities of dealing with Taylor.
Oh my gosh. So here's what I've been thinking about. First, I've been thinking about the Amazon workers in, is it Alabama, outside of Birmingham, that are trying
Birmingham is in Alabama, so probably.
Well, I mean, there's multiple cities in Alabama. And they're trying to form a union, and they've just are meeting stiff resistance from Amazon. And so I've been thinking about that. But then yesterday, my girlfriend was telling me about she works at a manufacturing facility that designs and manufactures electric cars. She's a designer. She designs the panel that is like the, where the speedometer is and stuff like that. And I think
that's called a dashboard.
Dashboard. Yeah. Anyway, the management of the company wanted to have a portrait of all the women that work there. I guess yesterday was like Women's Day, or this is Women's Month. And on the way to the picture, Meliot, my girlfriend, ran into the person that is hired to clean the facility, who is a 35-year-old woman who had not been invited to join the picture. And she was just crying in the bathroom about this. And I just, it just has broken my heart hearing the story, and Meliot refused to join the picture. And just, I cannot imagine how horrifying that experience would be, just to not be validated both as a woman and as a member of that workplace. And I just, it makes me furious that there's just so much lack of dignity in the workplace. And it's so evident that structural reform is needed to make this more democratic or more fair. And like, it's just, it doesn't seem like we're getting anywhere. And so the many indignities of work is what my headline, my expose would be. That's what I've been thinking about.
Thank you for sharing that. Let's see. I think Jess, you got one?
Yeah. So mine, once I realized that I needed to come up with a snappy headline, election integrity, it's not what you think. And this, to give some context, stems from a situation that has been going on in the Luzerne County Board of Elections. We neighbor Luzerne County here in Columbia County, as Jordy mentioned, and there has been mass chaos on their Board of Elections. They basically, the two Republicans on the board, because there were vacancies, appointed one of the Luzerne County Council members to be the chair of the Board of Elections, which is a very clear violation of Luzerne County's Home Rule Charter, not to mention just the thousand other reasons why that would be problematic that anyone can probably think of. And it's just like, been, I feel like so chaotic.
Yeah,
really, for months, but has gotten worse in the last couple of weeks.
You're describing this as like being on one of those roller coasters, like the tick, 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 tick up. And it's one I don't want to be on because the plunge is going to suck.
The plunge is already sucking. But I want to give props to like the Luzerne County Council, who immediately, the rest of the council immediately addressed this and voted to remove not only that council member from the Board of Elections last night, as well as the other two Republicans who overrode the sole Democrat left on the board to place him there. So it's an ongoing story, but in the defense, and it, this is something that we've seen pop up, and it's going to kind of come up in our discussion later. Election integrity is being used by the right as a code for, you know, all of the voter fraud claims and ways to deal with any rules for elections that they don't like. And that popped up multiple times last night in a very patriarchal way too. So it just connects so much to all of the other things that we end up talking about.
Can you say more about the patriarchal? I mean, was it a specific comment or?
Sure. So the comment from excuse me, while my cat tries to enter the podcast, the comment from the council member, because he, you know, was given an opportunity to speak, who was put on to the Board of Elections, he basically stated, well, it's ridiculous that I wouldn't be allowed to do this because I serve in county government. And if you don't do that, then you don't know how elections work. Mm-hmm. So that was part of it. And then he had what was clearly a planted supporter woman in the chat, and then who also made a public comment saying, well, he's the only one following the law, and he's the only one who really knows what's going on. And it like just all of those, you know, anyone who's worked in situations where there's sexual harassment and abuse and those things, like it just rang all of those bells in a lot of our heads that it was, you know, very much just a patriarchal language that was being used. And again, election integrity kept coming up as what they were trying to protect. And it was just kind of horrifying to listen to.
I have a quick question, Jess.
Sure.
If we have time for it. Was this person the head of the elections during the election, or was this after?
No. No, this is a county council member who's never, I shouldn't say never because I don't know that that's true, but I don't believe he had ever been on the Board of Elections. No, and he was also trying to claim a lot of legal arguments without a legal background. He was trying to present himself as a legal expert on this and is clearly not.
It's problematic because like this person is both like politically motivated and like has no qualifications.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. And has also violated, you know, the Luzerne County Charter, which is problematic because he's representing Luzerne County on the county council. Mm. So the question, you know, of his name, it's all in the news. Steve Urban is the council member who was placed on the council and who has now been removed. He still sits on the Luzerne County Council, right, but has been removed from the Board of Elections.
I mean, I was asking also because I'm kind of dumb. And so this man, I start to lose track of who we're talking about. So yeah, Steve Urban, it's interesting. When you were saying more about how he represented it and that the law is complicated or like he knows about it, like
it was patronizing.
Mm-hmm. My first thought was thinking about how often, you know, this is used to keep anyone out of like the electoral process, right? Like, oh, you don't really understand. Right. And so like the first big lie of the right was that the election was stolen, and that didn't really work. So now the second big lie, which you talked about, Jess, is there were problems, right? And sadly that is working better, and it's going to make the first big lie, it provides a kind of structure for the first big lie that it couldn't stand on its own. And so what's happening is, and we're seeing this get institutionalized and sort of encrusted like barnacles on a pier across the American political spectrum now. And it's really worrying is that there was a big problem. So it's going to be taken as received wisdom all the time. And going back to stupidity about patriarchy, that's how it, you know, it's often as well, it's received wisdom, you know, it's everybody knows. So it's really, you know, I mean, I'm glad there was some good news, but we have to be vigilant about this all the time.
Yeah. And it's an ongoing thing. Like it's an ongoing story. Like there's still further developments to come undoubtedly, but it just connects to so many of the other things that we've been talking about and that we're going to talk about in ways that I wouldn't have expected it to. So it just seemed like an appropriate fit for this discussion.
Totally. Kate, do you have one?
Yeah, I certainly do. I'm going to I'm going to say it, and then I'm going to wait for you to beg me to explain it. So my headline is Hurry Up and Wait.
I'm curious.
Is there a time?
Yes, everyone begged.
Time frame? Do we have to wait a certain amount of time?
It's a Blondie lyric. No, Hurry Up and Wait, because we as, you know, Americans, we as progressives, even people who are only just a little bit paying attention to political news and issues. There's a lot of people in America who've been waiting for a moment with leadership, and many of us have been waiting for a Democrat in the White House. Many of us have been waiting for some change at the local level. And now that we've passed through an era, it kind of feels like we have so much to do. There's so much we've been saying, like, when we get XYZ, when we get a new presidency, when we get XYZ, any number of things, we're going to change this. So I think everyone is collectively experiencing this sensation of hurry up and wait, where we've pushed through so many obstacles. But, you know, time doesn't bend that quickly. We still have to do a lot of work, and there's a lot to still pass through. And some of that is literally just experiencing time in the warped timeline of a pandemic. And some of it is now that we finally have all of these abilities and certain things have changed and the calculations have changed, what can we get done and how quickly?
Yeah. Well, that's great. All right. Well, thank you all for those headlines. So now we're getting to what we really wanted to be the main topic. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, we're talking about women's reproductive health, especially in the rural context, reproductive justice. I have so much to say about this. I've got a lot of things that are important to say. Jess, take it away.
No, Jordy, I'd love to hear from you a whole bunch on this. Your voice is one that's been missing from the discussion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No, I'm kidding. So Jordy and I, like, to be like totally transparent, Jordy and I did have a conversation about that and what is the role of men in the progressive movement in this space. And I think you could just kind of bumped on it probably without even realizing it. Like, it's not strictly women's reproductive health either. It's reproductive health. And as we try to build the most inclusive movement possible, we need to remember that. That's really important. And, you know, reproductive justice is really a term that has been used to address a lot of the racial inequities in the reproductive health movement. So it's just important to note that it does take all of us to have these conversations. And, like, I appreciate a conversation with someone who I know has the best intentions and wants to expand access and expand that justice, especially when we know that it's one part of a bigger system of inequity that we deal with every day.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Jess, what's the, and I don't know if I'm stepping on landmines here, but why reproductive versus sexual health?
You know,
that's because not all sex is for reproduction too, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm sure that this has been clearly thought out.
You know, I'll be honest. I'm not 100% sure what the answer is there. And I don't know, Kate, if you know anything on the language piece there. I don't think that I do.
I think
my guess,
there's definitely an argument to not defer to reproductive health as the ideal terminology, but it is still one of the ones that people understand what you're talking about. So, you know, with Taylor's flag that we do include people from every background and every gender. When we have these discussions, we are talking about the experience of taking care of your body in the realm of those sorts of treatments, procedures, medications, everything that falls under sexual and reproductive health would be befitting to this conversation. And I hope that's helpful to people, because the trans community and many of the communities that we are open armed at this podcast and in the organizing movements that I know each of you are part of, they do deserve to have that acknowledgement that is not an exclusionary word choice whatsoever. So I'm glad that Taylor highlighted it.
Yeah.
Yeah. My guess would honestly be that originally, sex is a bad word, it's a naughty word. I'm using air quotes on an audio medium, but,
not the first or the last time.
And there is still a stigma that exists when trying to, I'm guessing without the data to back this up, the information to back this up, that it's like, well, don't say sex. It's not sexual health, where now hopefully we can move away from that stigmatization of everything, right? Like, that's the goal, is, these aren't bad words. The reason that they're considered to be problematic is because we don't have conversations that include them.
I also don't know, but when Taylor said that, what popped into my head was at some point, or just evolved, but, given in the context of pro-choice trying to push back on the kinds of overt and sort of structural arguments that pro-life makes, a lot of that is about like whether or not sex is for pleasure and women's pleasure. And so it's just like, let's just bypass all of that. And, we'll be on better ground for these kinds of, narrative frame conflicts if we make it about anatomy and biology and not, these things that get really politically problematic.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But, there's so much we could do here, and I'm sure we're going to have to come back. Jess was kind enough to provide some really good background. I think, if I can just set you up, Jess, like one thing that one thing I got from reading some of the Guttmacher, if I'm saying that right, Institute, which I knew sort of in general, but, seeing the details reminded me, is that, I guess since the 80s, there's been this inexorable like drumbeat march of narrowing, restricting, redefining everything about sexual health, reproductive health. And it doesn't go away, right? Like, it's like we spent 4 years making Joe Manchin the most powerful person in the Senate. I mean, getting rid of Trump. And meanwhile, we still got fetal heartbeat bills. Do you feel, can you give us a little update about where things are with Pennsylvania, at least on the legislative side?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what we ignore at our peril is that these bills are part of a national strategy to continue to restrict access to the healthcare that people need and to the choices that people should be able to make on their own and with their doctors. So these bills are coming up everywhere. They're popping up, in lots and lots of states. Pennsylvania, for the last several years, has been fortunate that there's a governor who will veto any bills like this that could get passed. Tom Wolf has been a true champion of making sure that none of these horrific bills get all the way through. However, that has not changed the strategy. And we've seen many, many come up in the last 5 years, at the same time as knowing that on a national level, the cases a lot of times do have the goal of something will reach the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, as it moves further and further to the right, will strike down Roe versus Wade or Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And those are really the most significant bills dealing with choice significant rulings dealing with choice that we have on the books. And that's the goal. These are trigger laws to try to activate a court battle.
Jess, I want to sort of ask for you to speak to which actions people are able to take regarding, you know, the fetal heartbeat bill in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so we should mention, and I am going to, I'll take a step back for 1 second and defer to Jordy or Taylor to mention Doug Mastriano's official title that was granted to him from Barnstorming PA.
It's one of our famous tirade of hyphenates. I don't remember it well. Taylor does.
It is that Doug Mastriano is a Rambo fantasizing, science denying freeloader. That's what we have workshopped.
See, and I love it so much, but I knew I would botch it because I wasn't going to remember all of those.
we're gonna put it on a t-shirt, so look out for that.
Rambo, I remember the Rambo part. I remember the science denying part, but thank you. Thank you, Taylor. I knew I could count on you. Thanks for nothing, Jordan. But no, so Doug Mastriano was very excited to announce just the other day that Pennsylvania will be, he'll be introducing a fetal heartbeat bill in Pennsylvania, along with, and here's the connection to closer to where we are, with Stephanie Borowitz, who,
oh God.
Yeah, exactly. a rep from,
she makes Marjorie Taylor Greene seem rational.
Center in Clinton counties. Yes.
I'm not in the loop about what she did.
Borowitz, I mean, she's like taking pictures with Capitol stormers, racists. She's the one who, like gave the prayer when they swore in the Muslim PA rep.
I did know about that. Yeah.
Yeah. She's really all of the things that are kind of horrifying about where state and local governments are headed. You know, it's a lot of posting on her Facebook about how terrible the governor is because we choose to live as free people. It's all of the things that we're seeing.
Do you mean free to over. Infect other people with a global pandemic?
Yes, apparently. Okay. I do mean that.
That's
reference to what her words are.
That's in the Sixth Amendment in the Bill of Rights.
You know, not many people know that. Not
yeah, well, no one here can say what the Sixth Amendment is, so it must be true.
So, yep.
Is that the one about soldiers?
Nope.
Do I?
I don't actually know.
I don't know it, yeah.
The one okay. In fact, we've established that.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Can we move on? Yeah. So,
yeah, so this bill is going to be introduced in the Pennsylvania State House very soon.
I mean, can we dig into that first? Sorry, go ahead.
I'm doing the opposite of digging into it. So if you want to.
Well, no, I do for a second. Fetal heartbeat.
He's digging out of it.
I'm digging out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Fetal heartbeat bill. This is like, if there's an area in which it seems the right has the black belt in linguistic jiu-jitsu compared to us, it's that. Right. I mean, it's one of these things where I almost don't even want to say the bill because I feel like I'm reinforcing their core premise, which is there's a heartbeat. And so you're killing a living human.
Sure.
You know, Jordy, I do want to dig into, you know, sort of your conversation around messaging. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, I want to pin Jess down on this. What would be
action that we got talking about terrible state reps?
Yeah. What if one of your listeners wants to do something about it? What would they do?
Yeah. And in, Taylor and Jordy's defense, I would say that I'm sure we were going to get to that in the conversation anyway. But but yeah, no, I mean, the best thing we can do is to speak out on these sorts of things when they come up. We need letters to the editor. We need public comments whenever they can be made. We need everyone. And I know our state reps, you know, they're not great in terms of being responsive to their constituents' concerns. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't continue to reach out to them. And also then it's supporting organizations that are literally doing the work on the ground, like Planned Parenthood and lots of other organizations that are, you know, supporting the rights of everyone.
Okay. But and this is definitely a time you can smack me around for being ignorant. I don't feel like there's a strong Planned Parenthood presence in the area broadly. I don't feel like, and again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, this is something we've talked about in the Hub for Progress. Like, there are so many issues, and none of us are committing to this as, like, I think it's a mistake for progressives to think if you're not 100% up to speed on all issues, you're failing the movement. Like, none of us can do that. We have to rely on each other. But am I, you know, is that a concern? Like, you sent us some stuff that I thought was interesting. Like, is there a weird parallel, and I realize I'm talking too much, but sorry. Is there a weird parallel that there's less access to good health services in rural areas, but there's also fewer ways to help?
So you're not wrong, but you don't have to be right about that. And I think that's one of the goals that, I mean, we have discussed, you know, just as hub facilitators in general, you know, movement participants, is that there are access points and there is organizing to be done and that can be lifted up, but there's not a communications infrastructure for that. There's not a communications infrastructure for letting people who need the services know that it is available. You know, in terms of physical locations, this area of Pennsylvania is a wasteland, really. If you are not connected with a good, you know, healthcare provider, and I say good with a ton of salt, you know, not even one grain, it's like many, many grains of salt. Getting to a physical location where you can access services is extremely difficult. However, Planned Parenthood does offer telehealth options really throughout our whole region. And most people don't know that that exists and that it is available.
But as a man, I could never use that. I'm winking.
Jordy.
Come on. I set you up to make a good point.
I want to like, you guys met.
No, but hold on. We need to fix that. That's not true. I was trying.
Yeah, super not true.
Yeah, not everyone's going to see Jordy winking really hard with like half.
No, that's not true. I forget that my big sigh does not communicate all of the words.
The big sigh.
But no, that's just definitely not written. True. That's right. That we're going to workshop that nickname. But it's not. No, it's definitely not true.
A sigh that's worth 1,000 words.
Now we're moving on. Taylor, go ahead.
Well, I mean, like, this was what I was going to pivot to a little bit ago, but I don't know if this made the beginning of the podcast, but you guys met when you were responding to and trying to stop the closure of a health center in Columbia or Luzerne County. I forget which one it was. Can you just talk like, when was that and what happened with that? And like, was that like a learning moment and a opportunity that like something got built out of that? Like, I don't know if you could just tell me more about that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's not quite, and this may be the way I explained it. So Kate and I already knew each other from working on, oh Lord, Kate, what were we doing?
Stuff. So many things.
Election stuff.
Elections.
And that was happening, like we knew each other from that.
Like
and
what year?
This is 2018, okay. Right, Kate? Is that accurate? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's when we were besties.
I mean.
We're besties.
Please feel free to talk about, Jordy, I'm sorry, I'm taking the spot. Please feel free to talk about the organizing that happened around the round table and all of that, because I think that's pretty darn exciting.
Yeah. Well, so what ended up happening? So there's a Columbia Montour Family Health was a clinic that had existed in Bloomsburg. And also at one point had another location in Berwick, that was, had been around for like 40 years. And what ended up happening is that the executive director decided, who had been there for a very long time, decided that she wanted to step down. And then there were major problems, largely due to the funding circumstances that the clinic was in by that point, finding replacements for her, finding replacements for medical staff and all of those things came together in the worst way at the worst time of when it just ended up not being possible to keep it open because there just wasn't enough time to fix all of the problems. And some people in the community had really tried to rally and make that happen in a very quick way, and it just was not possible to do so. So being one of those people and knowing that Kate cared about that a lot and had tried to help there at the end when it was on its last legs, and working with some people who had been affiliated or who had been on the board there who were trying to save it, we started doing some organizing locally, because we also, you know, Bloomsburg University is a huge chunk of the patients that had been seen. That's still a huge need. We worked with the director of the Women's Resource Center at Bloomsburg University, saying, like, you know, because she basically said, my students have nowhere to go at this point, because now it's a 45-minute trip to the next place that provides any sort of family planning services. So just started organizing on ways to just make that situation better. We knew we couldn't fix it, but finding access points and finding out what people need and all of those things, like, that's what we knew we needed to do. And that work was really underway and was starting to take a decent shape when the pandemic hit, and it did sort of get stalled. And Kate, if you want to add anything, feel free.
Yeah, just to sort of support the timeline, and you correct me if I'm way off and like have merged memories, but I have like this really clear memory of us, you know, going around like patting our volunteers on the back from the 2018 midterm election, and, you know, everyone sort of having a general cheerful mood. And I like turned to Jess, like ready to be like, Jess, are you ready to, like, this is exaggerating now, but are you ready to cut the cake? It's time to celebrate. And, you know, like trying to hand her the knife, and she's like, not now, there's a crisis. And it was a real crisis. It
might be a slight dramatization,
don't correct me. It wasn't dramatic.
But you're not wrong about how that went down. Yeah.
But I do remember that feeling. We had won so much, and something so integral to our area and something so priceless had been taken away in what felt like one breath, because
it happened very fast.
It was very
fast. And that
was
the problem. That's why it couldn't get turned around.
And Jess was immediately, instead of celebrating, you know, what victories we had to celebrate, she was on the phone trying to recruit people to replace those who were stepping down. You know, others that she tapped did a lot of legwork to hold up the structure that exists, so we didn't have to reinvent the wheel from scratch. There are a lot of incredible women in our area who stepped up as soon as they understood there was a need. But, you know, there was almost this element of the momentum that came behind that event. So, Jess, I'd really love if you told the group a little more about what you did next to sort of build from scratch almost. Because I got to be part of that until I left for Kamala's campaign in New Hampshire. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't want to take up, you know, the whole podcast time talking about this very sad story, but it is important, because what we really started doing was, you know, we just started organizing. You know, I began reaching out, you know, and being obviously involved in Democratic politics and progressive politics, the good thing is that we had a lot of contacts for people that we knew would be supportive. And it was literally like, I don't know what you think you can offer, but I know that you can offer something because you care about this. And I had that conversation so many times where people were just like, I know how bad this is. I have no idea how I can help. And it's like, okay, we'll figure that out as we go. And it literally boiled down to me on the phone with like 50 people and ending up with like 30 people in my living room saying, okay, here's the problem. We don't have a solution, but we know that we need to make to try to make things better in this situation. And that's what happened.
And what has that evolved into? Oh, go ahead, Jordy.
Well,
wait, no. I want to hear this.
Hold on. No. Taylor,
what happened?
let's say, you know, it's 2016. Okay. And I'm a 17-year-old young woman in Catawissa, and I was raped by my uncle. Okay. And I'm worried that I'm pregnant. What would I have done then? I could have gone to this clinic, right?
So the clinic did not provide abortion services.
But at least I could have. I don't know.
Sure. So, and there's another.
I know there's another.
I made it this way for a reason
because of something you read. But yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. We'll come to that in a second. But yeah, so the option at that point would have been to go to Columbia Montour Family Health. You know, and this is assuming that you can't go to your family doctor, family health care provider, because there's a ton of reasons why people don't feel comfortable doing.
Completely realistic that yep. in that scenario.
Exactly. So the options then are Columbia Montour Family Health at that point, or a place like Your Loving Choices, which is a crisis pregnancy center.
We have one of those in Lewisburg.
Yeah. They're everywhere. They're very well funded, a lot of times by the taxpayers, which is a different conversation, but one to have for sure. And
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like I said, that's a whole other discussion that we could have, but it's very real. So those are typically your choices. And Columbia Montour Family Health, while they did not provide abortion services directly, could provide referrals and help get appointments and help try to figure out and navigate anything that would need to be done. And provided all kinds of contraceptive services and just sexual health services in general.
Right. And be a safe space for, yes. you know, and I'm deliberately
completely,
doing this.
Completely.
Me as this 17-year-old female, you know, this break by the uncle. I mean, I think we all know that that is a realistic scenario. So there's counseling. I mean, mm-hmm. there's potentially prenatal health. If I, you know, yep. want to keep the child, there's counseling about my options, realistic counseling, not one of these, what did you call it? You're pregnant. So suck it up clinic. What was it called? Healthy Choices.
Yeah. Your Loving Choices.
Right. Which is really anti-abortion counseling disguised as health services.
That is correct. That's Kate, right. Do you want to build on that?
I think Jordy did an excellent job. It's a bit of a misdirect. It's, you know,
a bit.
Kate, it's a total misdirect.
It is intended to bring people in. It's well advertised. You'll see billboards in rural Pennsylvania for these centers, very well advertised so that people know if you're pregnant, if you have questions, go here. But they will never give you a whole array of options, including some of them that have nothing to do with abortion, because they're really geared to just make sure that they are excluding you from the option of abortion. So really, it is not full health care, and it's also not abortion.
So
extremely misleading, because if you do look up, mm-hmm. and it used to be in the yellow pages, now it's on Google, abortion. Bloomsburg, that's the first thing that's going to come
same,
up.
Same thing for Union County. Okay. Yeah. So our resilient and still tragic 17-year-old goes to Montour, what was it called?
Columbia Montour Family Health.
Columbia Montour Family Health gets good information, decides that she wants to at least investigate the option of an abortion. She would get a referral to the hospital.
She will know, because they're not can't go to a hospital to get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Have to go to
this is like the worst. This is like the worst maze anyone's ever. No one wants to be in this maze.
Yeah.
So where would she have gone in 2017?
She at that point would have to go to Allentown,
which is an hour and a quarter away.
Anywhere that she could have gone would have been at least an hour and a half away.
Oh, well, good, sure. Because her uncle has a car.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oops.
Yep. Let's say her access problem at every level.
Let's say her best friend, Jessica, takes mm-hmm. her to Allentown. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she can get an abortion, right?
Well, no, she has to go through, because of Pennsylvania state law, there has to be, I think it's a 24-hour waiting period.
I know this from what you sent me to read.
Yeah, because there are, I couldn't remember if we were on a 24 or 48-hour waiting period, in which, I mean, it's what it says it is. You have to get questions asked. They have to ask if you're sure you want to have that procedure done. And then the next day, 24 hours later, hopefully, if you can get back to where you need to go or if you can stay there, then
I'm sure I can lie to my parents and tell them that I need to stay overnight.
Sure. And hoping that you have the money to do that and figure out the financial pieces of it, which is another barrier to access for sure.
Well, that doesn't seem too much to ask of our resilient 17-year-old.
Yep.
Except I think you're forgetting one thing.
I probably am.
Mom or dad have to sign off on the abortion.
Oh, that too. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I think so you bring up a great point, but what we need to remember is that these aren't things that always happen in like really terrible circumstances. That's one part of it. But the other thing is like, sometimes people are just pregnant and don't want to be. Mm-hmm. And there's a thousand reasons why that's the case. And it's just not any of anyone's business. Like it doesn't have to be from a situation like that. I think it's easy to go there and see why that's so horrible, but this is an everyday occurrence. It's an everyday occurrence that's made more difficult by the fact that there's not comprehensive sex education in our schools. And the barrier to the information that you even need on what services are available is huge.
Yeah, as you pointed out, even just Googling it is not really even easy or sometimes possible, depending on do you know what you're looking for?
Sure.
And
if you think you do know what you're looking for, is what you find going to be trustworthy?
Correct.
I just, I'm really glad you said, the part about, it's an everyday occurrence and I think it highlights, you know, I picked that case because I wanted to highlight, like, I think subconsciously, I wanted to highlight how extreme the circumstances can be, but I really appreciate what you said because it also highlights that, what should be normal medical decisions for a man, right? Like we're having to use the most extreme circumstances of this, like
to tragic, explain why it's so bad.
Right. And to get to a place of normalcy, right? Like it's just like for people who are all in on the other side of this, and we've had this conversation, I'm kind of sympathetic to some of their arguments, but overall they just can't see that the politicization of healthcare here has made it so that the very, what should be very normal is almost unthinkable. Like what you said is almost unthinkable to a lot of people is what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way.
I think that it's also difficult for a lot of people having this conversation to imagine some of the more quote unquote normal scenarios as well. A normal scenario where a woman might have to think through this decision and would rightfully have her own ability to choose which, you know, what decision, you know, was her own might look like a woman who's already working double shifts, no weekends at a minimum wage job and knows that she neither has the physical capacity nor time nor financial resources to have a baby now and goes very, very, very early to seek, you know, some sort of medical or chemical recourse for ending the pregnancy. Does she have the ability to have that conversation with a doctor right when she chooses to do it? Does she have access to those resources early, 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 like she chose? Because I think a lot of these conversations go back to the extreme example because we fail to imagine the normal scenarios, the normal situations that women find themselves in where, you know, it's the morning after or something and she's made her decision, but by the time she has a doctor's appointment with a doctor who's willing to discuss this kind of decision with her, that might be a lot further out, actually. So those are the sort of complicating factors that you might not experience in the heart of a major city because of the type of access, but we do need to be cognizant of in rural America, and rural Pennsylvania is definitely not an exception to that sort of lack of access.
So I want to hear what happened like with the Columbia Montour thing, like where has that been? Like, I know this isn't that long ago, but like, where has that, is there like a group organizing to bring it back? Like, is there, what came out of that meeting with 30 people in your living room, Jess?
Yeah. So several different pieces have come from that original meeting. One piece has been on a, what is a very basic level, what is something that a lot of people need in this area that we can provide quickly, because sometimes that's the best thing you can do is what can I get to someone quickly? And we found that one of the really great needs was menstrual products. So we held some drives for those sorts of things that were very successful. Another piece was gathering the information because one of the services that had been provided that wasn't a direct health service was information that could go out to local schools on sex education and just safe sex and all of, you know, all of the things that kids need to make the best decisions and the healthiest decisions for themselves. So that was a service that was automatically gone. So some outreach was started to the local schools to find out which ones were willing to have that conversation, as well as learning where there were real problems in terms of what the sex education looked like and figuring out how to navigate that. One of the people that we had at that meeting was a school board member who was already working on that. So like, the education piece was very, very much there. We tried to tackle as many things as we could because as none of us are healthcare providers, we did have some connections to healthcare providers, but we knew we couldn't do that right away. The other piece is that there's a Caring Communities clinic, which is Caring Communities for AIDS. It is the, you know, original organization exists throughout this area that provides STD testing, HIV counseling, lots of other wonderful services. They, since then, because one of the, trying to remember her title, one of the education coordinators, I'll say, for Columbia Montour Family Health had already gone to work there. And the staff there was very supportive of trying to also provide some family planning services. In the meantime, my understanding, because this has happened all during the chaos of the last year, is that they are able to do that. I'm not sure if they have started providing those services yet, but if they haven't, they will be in the near future. And the other thing is that, like, there is still an effort being made to say, okay, what do we still need? What could we provide as a community? And what partners can we work with to do that?
So thinking, Jess, about what you're saying, like, and I say this because, like, we're both hub facilitators and the most precious resource is labor and time. I say this seriously, I almost wonder if the solution to the closure of the Columbia Montour Family Health Clinic, did I get the name right this time?
Yep.
Is like, for you, like, would it be better to spend your time getting a fully comprehensive Pennsylvania or federal healthcare system that would cover more things, or to try to bring that clinic back and fight the sort of local pressure, the local pushback? You know what I'm saying? Like, we may be better off, instead of trying to come up with rural solutions, to go all in on a Medicare for all type plan that would actually provide more coverage. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to sort of provide a big, kind of go back to sort of big strategy, but also what Taylor's saying, like, as an organizer, you know, what do we spend our time on?
So it's a great question. And I don't have a perfect answer for sure.
I get the big bucks for the great questions.
Yeah. Obviously, clearly. But I think there's a couple follow-up questions to that. One is pushing for Medicare for all and having that include all of these services is great, but does that equal access? Mm-hmm. The answer to that is a fuzzy no at best, because if the services are not available within a reasonable distance, within, you know, any of the other parameters that Kate mentioned, you know, again, it would be more affordable, but if people also don't know that there's access to it, even if there is access, then it's a problem. So there's a lot of different pieces. And that's where I think what we've tried to do locally, and this is, I will say, one of the failings of the clinic and the reason why it closed, you know, until it was too late, there was not a public outcry because there was not communication going on to the community that was being served. And that sort of thing is what needs to be happening in every community where there are actually services available. So I mean, I think it's multiple, those multiple pieces for sure.
Just a quick sidebar on that piece, and then maybe we can close this out. But like, you know, one of the things you shared was this Kaiser Family Foundation report, and it was a really cool study. And so we're going to put in the show notes. I really liked how it was both statistics, but then they looked at several different counties. I think one was where there was a Native American reservation. One was predominantly African-American county in Alabama. One was Erie County in Pennsylvania. And Erie, which has a population of 93,000, a person in Erie County who's seeking these kinds of health services has a 90-minute drive from there, right? Yep. And a whole nother theme that I'll just throw out that we didn't even get to is, you know, how much do we blame the Catholic Church in Pennsylvania for some of these local barriers to access? Any current or recovering Catholics on the show?
Certainly listeners.
I am. Certainly I listeners. Am a Catholic. I continue to be.
No shade about that, but you know, it does seem like one of those things, because this report talked about how local chain differences and variation can intersect with these yeah. national things. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so Jess or Kate, anything more about sort of that big question I said, like, you know, if we have limited time, is the best path to sort of go local or try and get things dealt with at the state or federal level?
Yeah, I think you're just correctly highlighting that it's a both and. Unfortunately, you know, we don't get to tell everyone who cares about these issues, just do this or just do that. But what we can say is do at least something to support one of those two directions or one of those two approaches, because it's going to matter for the overall health and well-being of our communities, not just individual people making decisions around their care.
All right. Taylor.
I just want to. I hope we're doing the
way you want to have the last. You want to have the last word in the women's topic. That's what you're doing.
No, I'm just saying. I hope we do the waving the wand. If you could.
Oh, that's just a good time to do that. This is actually a good time to do that. Yeah.
Because I'm curious, like, what the ideal solution would be that you guys envision.
Is the setup clear? We're asking you, right?
Yeah, if you could, like, wave your magic wand and, like, without any of the work, have the solution in place, like, what would you wave your magic wand to do? And it has to be something fairly concrete.
I have a few concrete things that I would wave a wand to accomplish. One of them, one of the most important, is giving doctors protection to have real conversations, to give their patients the full range of options and consequences, without it being couched in, you know, other kinds of externalities, because there are lots of doctors that would love to really, really, really help, but are being restricted in ways that are very tough. And I think that if we had that magic wand to wave, it would accomplish a great deal of what we are working so hard for.
That's a great one. But so, like, with the Hippocratic Oath comes some Hippocratic freedom.
That's right.
Yeah, because I think we think of gag rules on abortion services, you know, where doctors aren't allowed to give patients all of the options. We tend to think of that as something that's restricted by the government. It's also 100% restricted by the healthcare networks because they don't want to get political.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is such, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, Kate. Like, that's such an important problem. And it's a huge problem in this area where, as we know, we have big healthcare networks that
have Geisinger.
an iron grip on what their doctors are and are not allowed to say to their patients.
We basically live in a healthcare duopoly in this area between UPMC and Geisinger.
100%.
But that's not your magic wand thing, Jess, right? You have your own?
No, I would say so. Yeah. Cause I like her magic wand thing, but I think also then having clinics and services available in more communities, you know, it's insane that with the closure of this one tiny, by this point, tiny, tiny clinic, that cut out services for Columbia County, Montour County, some of the other surrounding counties where nothing exists. I think the closest
just pause for a sec. Well, I mean, one of the things that's crazy about that is Montour County is the smallest county by land area in Pennsylvania, and it is home to one of the largest healthcare campuses in Geisinger. So, you know, it's a place that people are coming from 2 and 3 and 4 hours and countries away to get healthcare. And the people in Montour County cannot get, I'm getting on my soapbox, what they need. But just to push you a little bit on the soapbox, like, is there a way to get more of those clinics? Like, do you have a thought or an idea about?
Yeah. So they need funding, right? So they need like, and there is state money that's available. And that's one of the financial problems that came through. There's like I'm trying to remember what it's called. I don't want to misrepresent, but there's, I think, like a family planning, which is, we can get into the framing of that at a different point, state council that makes some decisions on who gets awarded grants basically to operate these spaces. And as well as just being able to fundraise in a way that, in an ethical way, to do to provide the services that are needed, there are options that are available at the state level, especially in Pennsylvania, where, you know, it's not one of the worst states. That's the worst thing. Like, we're talking about Pennsylvania how rough it is.
Not one of the worst. But we are number one in people who got arrested at the Capitol, by the way. That came out yesterday. But so we're number one there, but here we're at least not number one.
Yeah. But so there is money that's available that is given to big healthcare providers all the time. And again, you mentioned the duopoly that we live in. Little clinics are shut out by these big providers that don't really provide services to the communities if the patients aren't in network, you know? So there are really options for this sort of thing to exist, but we have to break out of the corporate healthcare structure.
So, you know, my magic wand, because I am utterly juvenile, my magic wand that I would wave, first of all, is if I could get the chastitybelt.com website out of my browser history, because Jess sent me this thing about how Santorum's quotes led to an increase in sales of chastity belts. And of course, I clicked on the link because I was curious what a modern chastity belt, you know, maker is about.
Did you order one?
I mean, I have a 17-year-old daughter. No, of course I didn't. And on top of that, one of the weird things in that was they sell more steel than leather by far, and more male ones than female. He didn't actually explain that, the person they were interviewing. I don't know if you read into it. So thank you, Jess. You leave internet rabbit holes. No, of course you're not sorry.
I'm not sorry at all.
We do have
Rick Santorum, by the way.
Yes.
The worst on this. Pennsylvania yet again represented terribly by Rick Santorum.
But yes, anyway, absolutely.
Continue.
So is this how we find out Jordy doesn't know how to clear his cookies?
No,
I got so many jokes. So many jokes.
I do.
Moving on. Wait, so my magic wand is
you don't get one, Taylor. Did you think you got one?
Okay. So
you can do yours.
So
sure.
I'm in the process of buying health insurance right now after having.
Oh, look, I talked to you for 2 hours access, about this yesterday. We're not bringing this onto the podcast.
See, right there, though, buying health insurance. Continue. Go ahead.
That after 2.5 years of just having access to, like, well, I mean, you have to pay $20 to go to the hospital here and get checked out, but it's not that bad.
So many humble Swedish brags yet again. Keep going.
Yeah. But it's just, yeah, I don't know. If I had to wave my magic wand, I would just it's such a big problem and complex that like I don't even know what I would do. But I know that it's just so messed up and the insurance companies are just so parasitic.
Okay, well, since we get a magic wand, I have one for this that
has you already had yours.
Well, it's one I've
involved the chastity belt cookie.
Oh, no, that was
also.
That was,
do people know that Taylor is not Swedish? That he's American.
I'm American. Yeah.
I mean, if they're listening for the first time, they may not. But yeah,
Taylor's mom probably knows.
Exactly. She's our number one fan. No, well, I was trying to transition to the game, but since we're doing this, like to me, a magic wand.
Do we have time for the game?
Just let me do my magic wand. The magic wand is that we would have an actual constitutional amendment that's a right to privacy that would include medical right to privacy, because then Roe v. Wade is not in this weird legal space where they sort of like it's not wrong when the right says they interpret it because I've read the case. So we need a clear right to privacy for medical reasons, for the internet. That would be my magic wand.
Yeah, and having abortion rights codified instead of relying on
it's weird case law. It's a weird case law.
It's insane.
It is. So we can.
Do we have time for the game? Do you guys have time?
There is a game. It'll take about 10 minutes.
I pushed my 12 o'clock. So go ahead.
I'm available.
All right.
Okay. All right.
And so imagine that I had made the clever segue about the magic wand and how juvenile I am to sort of lighten the mood. Okay. Taylor. Here we go. So this is the game. It's called Men Say Stupid Shit Across the Ages. So this is the way it works. I'm going to read you, I have quotations that are from three periods in human history. One is broadly contemporary, like within the last 10 years, let's say. The second is the 19th century Victorian period. And the third is sort of the roots of Western civilization. Gandhi famously said he'd like to see that. It would be a good idea, Western civilization, which always cracked me up. But yeah, you know, Greek, Roman philosophers. So I'm going to read the quote, and then each of you is going to guess, is it contemporary, 19th century Victorian, or ancient? And you have to keep your own score. We don't have a scoreboard yet. We're waiting for a sponsor. And I will say that I have slightly edited a few to make them either clearer or also to like not have like elocution that's going to clearly give it away for its time period. Okay. Any questions?
Got it. All right.
Get it.
Bring it on.
All right. Here's the first one. Contraception is a license to do things in a sexual realm that is counter to how things are supposed to be. They're supposed to be within marriage. They are supposed to be for purposes that are, yes, conjugal, but also procreative. That's the perfect way that a sexual union should happen. We take any part of that out. We diminish the act. And if you can take one part out that's not for purposes of procreation, that's not one of the reasons, then you diminish this very special bond between men and women. So is that contemporary, Victorian, or ancient?
Is it an ABC structure here?
Sure.
Are we going A?
A contemporary, FHS.
That does sound like something Rick Santorum would say. So I am going to also go with Jess. It's contemporary.
I'm marking it as Victorian because it was very specific and repetitive.
Nice. Were you an English major, Kate?
No.
Taylor also gets the bonus point. It is contemporary and it is Rick Santorum.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Do I get 2 points?
Sure. You get 2 points. This is the second one. If an individual has sex with their wife while she's unconscious, a prosecutor could then charge that spouse with rape theoretically. However, not where people have a history of years of sexual activity. maybe that's not 100, basically saying a wife cannot be raped if she's asleep because they have a history.
Contemporary.
Yep.
Taylor.
I'll go with the consensus.
Yeah, that one is contemporary. State Representative Brian Green from Utah in a hearing about a bill that would make, it was a consent bill, and so it had in it that an unconscious woman cannot give consent, and he was arguing against that.
How contemporary is this?
5 years ago.
Yeah, I sort of cheated in that. I definitely had read that already.
Okay, I tried to avoid some of the most obvious ones. All right, here's the next one. A boy is actually a woman, anatomically speaking, and a woman is, so to speak, an infertile male. She's female because of a kind of inadequacy such that she is unable to concoct semen from nourishment owing to the coldness of her nature.
I hope it's Victorian, but it might not be.
Jess is going Victorian.
I'm going ancient.
Ancient, Taylor.
I wanna guess ancient, and I wanna guess Jeff Sessions said it.
He's not that old. Which is it, Taylor? He's not that old. Is it Sessions or ancient?
10 points for Taylor, no matter what the answer is.
So Kate, did you guess to Victorian or did you guess?
I went ancient. I think there's always been people who thought that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm going to go with ancient too, I think. Yeah.
I mean, I will point out that genetically a male is a female. Isn't that correct?
At first. Yeah.
At first, okay. Yeah.
Everyone's female and then.
Right. You know. We're the mutation. That's the takeaway for me. That is ancient. It is Aristotle.
Also, did you know that a woman came from the rib? So,
oh boy,
right. So, what are your scores? I'm not keeping track.
What Taylor do you have, Taylor? Has 5,000 from the Jeff Sessions joke.
You don't know your scores. Okay, great.
You said no scoreboard, not till we get a sponsor.
I have 2 points.
Okay, Jess has 2. Taylor has 2+. To not 0, right? Kate's been doing pretty well, I think. Kate, do you have 3? All right.
I had 1. I really wasn't keeping score.
All right, fine. You're all tied, except Taylor has a bonus point. All right, next one. At this speed, her uterus may fly from her body.
I'm going to go with Victorian.
I feel like that's Victorian.
That's contemporary. I mean, unless you change the word uterus.
It's Victorian, and I cheated a little bit. It was a worry that was talked about when trains were becoming prevalent in England, that they thought that the uterus at high speeds, the woman's body, that the uterus floats around in the body. And at that high of a speed, they literally thought it could fly out of her body. Okay, so number 5.
Isn't that what they thought hysteria was?
Yeah, that it's floating around you.
Yep.
This floating around is... has been also, it also goes back to ancient times and all kinds of bizarre things to supposedly keep it locked down. Okay, here's the next one. Flying through the air seems not to be appropriate for ladies from a medical point of view. Contemporary, ancient, or Victorian?
The when airplanes were becoming more popular mode of travels, contemporary?
Well,
contemporary?
That would not be considered contemporary.
Right, but that's not Victorian either.
Yeah. Kate,
I'm going to say
Kate's found a loophole. I can't reveal more. Victorian? Okay, Taylor.
Yeah, and I'm going to say that it's about witches.
Jess?
Oh, witches. I don't know. Oh, man, I don't know.
It's about air travel.
Maybe
it's a hot air balloon thing or a Zeppelin thing.
So you're sticking Victorian, Kate, right?
I don't know.
I think
it's Kate, an air travel thing.
Okay, so Kate's going
contemporary,
Victorian.
But I contemporary. Feel like that definition is flawed.
It's contemporary. It was an official from the International Ski Jump Association arguing in 2005 why women's ski jumping should not be in the Olympics, and he lost the case. And so now women's ski jumping was not in the Olympics until 2008 or 12.
Not going to lie, did not see that coming.
That was a plot twist.
Yes.
That's
why these games are fun.
I'm not really a skier, but I really feel like going skiing now.
Did you guys know that the What is it that winter game where it's like the cross country skiing?
Biathlon.
The biathlon. Do you know that used to be called border control? That was
Was it really? I mean, in Finland, it's an after school.
No, it was called border control, and it was just like the alpine countries competing against each other.
Of course, that's why the Finns were so good at it, because they all had to, you know, they were worried about the Soviet Union and Russia. Sheesh. All right, next one. Number six, women oppose change, receive passively, and add nothing of their own. Women oppose change, receive passively, and add nothing of their own. See, Jess, that's why the clinic closed.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to say ancient.
Victorian, contemporary.
Ancient, but I'm not convinced.
Victorian.
Taylor?
I'll go ancient.
Sigmund Freud.
Oh.
Really?
Yep. All right. Number seven.
Well, he wasn't Victorian.
No.
Well, I didn't mean. Yeah. I mean,
these time
chronologically,
periods are rough.
That's, I would consider that contemporary. Yes. Yeah.
What? Sigmund Freud was writing in the late 19th century.
And into the 20th.
Not very much. Look, Sigmund Freud is not contemporary,
but it's not Victorian.
And he's not ancient. I don't know how you got.
But he's not.
You
know? That's so. I agree.
So
with
no
that.
One,
he's not
no
Victorian
one wins
either. Yeah. So do you know who loses points? Jordy.
No.
Yeah, Jordy's minus one.
No, I am in control. All right. Here's the next one, number seven.
You know, I went to Sigmund Freud's house actually in Vienna.
Was there a cigar shop?
No.
Oh.
No, it's a museum though. He died in 1940, Jordy. It's not.
Okay, but most of his writing was much. That is from a 19th century piece of writing. I know.
Okay.
All right. Number seven. The fact that women have often look. I didn't even want to include that, but I thought Freud would be interesting. So Freud loses.
What does that say about you?
The fact that women have often equaled and sometimes excelled men in physical labor, intellectual effort, and lofty heroism is sufficient proof that women have muscle, mind, and soul as well as men. But should they? Boys must study and work in a boy's way and girls in a girl's way. They may study the same books and attain an equal result, but should not follow the same method. Contemporary, Victorian, ancient.
I hate to say I've definitely read that before, but where?
It was the Berwick policy manual for the school district.
I didn't actually go to Berwick School. I went to Central, so I guess I missed that one.
Okay, well, that's why didn't recognize it. That's why you
go
didn't recognize
Jays.
It.
Exactly.
What do you think, Taylor? Contemporary, Victorian, or ancient? You know, lofty heroism. That's a contemporary term.
Lofty heroism? I'll go Victorian.
Mm-hmm.
Feels Jess? Victorian to me.
I'm just going to keep guessing ancient until I get one.
You know what? I'm changing
because
my
answer. One of them has to be
contemporary.
Ancient.
Contemporary, ancient. Okay, great. That is Victorian. It's from the classic Edmund C. Clarke, I think his name, or Edmund C. Hall. He's the one who also said because women menstruate, they need their brains can't handle it. So I picked it also because I thought it was a little interesting because he's giving women credit, like they could be as good as
that
men.
Was the part that threw me.
Right.
Yeah. So he was kind of weirdly like a lot of these are actually interesting in a complicated way if you dig into the history. I mean, Freud also was both said crazy shit, but also recognized, you know, some important things. But yeah, this guy was in a way saying they have a lot of capability, but for the sake of the species, they need to preserve.
Good.
Yeah. Well,
and the turn of phrase is
for the good of the, yeah.
But
yeah.
Should they?
Right. Mm-hmm. This one I just love. After sexual intercourse, every animal is sad except the cock, meaning a rooster, and the woman.
Repeat the beginning.
After sexual intercourse, every animal is sad except for the cock, the rooster, and the woman.
Is sad.
So this is another plot twist. Contemporary, Victorian, ancient.
That's Mike Pence. I know it.
Women would also be sad if it was Mike Pence. I think that's Victorian.
Kate?
I think it's like a contemporary poet, so I'm going contemporary.
Taylor?
I'm contemporary, yeah.
It is the 2nd century BCE Turkish philosopher Galen of Pergamon, who wrote about all of
those. I didn't go with ancient.
I know, I was thinking about that. Okay, there's just two more.
This game should be called Misogyny Through the Ages.
Mm. Yes.
That could work.
That's a better name than what you initially came up with.
Mm-hmm. Then it could be, well, mm-hmm. I also like men saying stupid shit.
Men saying shit. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I like them. I like them both.
Okay.
Well, now they've both been said. Don't worry.
Here's the penultimate one about pregnancy. Swallowing a camera and will help the doctor determine what the situation is. So on pregnancy, swallowing a camera will help the doctor determine what the situation is, right? Like there's a question mark at the end.
Is, I mean, I'm not, I mean, obviously totally it's not joking. Ancient. Is that Todd Akin? Is that what? No,
it's contemporary.
It's definitely contemporary.
It's definitely contemporary. It's not Todd Akin. And I have his name somewhere. It was a legislator, in state legislature, clearly not understanding that the intestinal system and the reproductive system are not connected by a special tubey tube.
Listen, it easily could have been Akin, though. So that was a great guess, Taylor.
Yes, yes. Okay, the last one is a slightly different format.
Wait, you didn't say... Oh, okay.
It's contemporary.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm going to give you three quotes, okay, A, B, and C, and you have to figure out their correct chronological order from older to more recent. You understand?
Ooh.
So there's three quotes.
This is the tiebreaker. Oldest to most recent.
Yes. And so you're going to have to order them. Here's the first one. So quote A, for without lust or pleasure in the venereal act, no conception can probably take place, so that if an absolute rape were to be perpetrated, it is not likely she would become pregnant. That's A. B, for even if some women conceive after being raped, that there is this to say, that even if these women, that even in these women, the quality of desire was present at any rate, but it was overshadowed by the judgment of the psyche. I'm going to read that one again because I stumbled. For even if some women conceive after being raped, there's this to say, that even in these women, the quality of desire was present at any rate, but it was overshadowed by the judgment of the psyche. And letter C, from what I understand from doctors, that's really rare. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down.
I'm going with BAC.
BAC, okay.
In terms of like...
Oldest to newest.
Yes. Yeah, correct. BAC. That's what, okay.
I think it's BAC as well.
Taylor? C is a bit.
C is definitely the, that's, I mean, that is
we Todd all, Akin. That yeah. is Todd Akin, yes.
Yeah,
couldn't do this without bringing in Todd Akin.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be contrarian and go ABC.
Okay. BAC is correct. B was an ancient Greek philosopher. A was slight fudge here, was an 18th century medical text. And C was Todd Akin. All right. So I put that one in. That's the one that especially made me a little sick to my stomach because it's so awful. And it also shows like
no progress.
No progress. So I do have a kind of palate cleanser. This is not a question, but I just want to share from an 1850 text by a man named Blanchard, a Victorian. This is actually about the Victorians and sexuality was more complicated than we sometimes imagine it. Anyway, he wrote in a text that the party whose temperament predominates in the child was in the highest state of orgasm at the period of intercourse, basically saying to parents, if you want your kid to be like you, you got to orgasm harder, which I thought was pretty great. And it's going to provide hours of entertaining discussion for all the people out there.
Jordy? Ahem, science.
Sounds legit.
I'm just going to steer clear because I have three offspring.
Who are all getting chastity belts really soon.
No. So
Christmas.
That's our game. We have proven, not that it needed proving, that men have been saying stupid shit through the ages. Well,
I'm really glad that you were able to do a full podcast on reproductive health and sexuality without making it weird. Thanks.
I'm not sure that we achieved that.
I don't know if that's...
One of the guests said it, so it must be true.
I had to try really hard and not to make even more juvenile stupid jokes because it just comes too easily. It's being of my age. She said. Yeah, that's what she said. Totally.
Taylor, I would high five you. Actually, can you video high five me?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for coming. I'm sure we'd love to have you back. Jess, thank you for all of the really interesting some background reading. I know I learned a lot and filled in some gaps. Taylor, thank you for co-parenting a legal person with me.
It's my pleasure.
Can I say, can I just have like one last,
we want thought? You to have last word.
So, and I know we had intended to discuss this a little bit more, and then we got into some more of the local history of what has happened. All of the people trying to control other people's bodies and dictate what they can and cannot do are the same people who are perpetuating all sorts of lies about the election and elections being stolen and using buzzwords like election integrity, which apparently means fake accusations of voter fraud and all of those things. So I think it's just really important to note that this is a concerted strategy from all of those forces, and that we need to be looking at this piece of it as a progressive movement as part of the ways to counter all of that as well.
I agree with that. And I think it's important to really take our freedom seriously as progressive actors, as Democrats, as people who just care about their community, whichever identity you affiliate with, our ability to be productive, happy, and successful is deeply related to these freedoms.
That's the mic drop. I'm trying not to say the last word. We're in the music. Awesome. Thank you so much. Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Root, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Gillysburg, Orbisonia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Wellesburg, Robsonia, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Schick, Shanny, Big Shanny, Amadanny. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Belfont, Southmont, Westmont, Womelsdorf, Nordmont, Dormont, Lebanon, Holmes Wharf, Cedar Springs, Bowling Springs, Chess Springs, Center Bridge, Centersport, Leesport, Williamsport, Brackenridge, Lumber City, Central City, Lake City, Clearfield, Westfield, Winfield, Richfield, big deal. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valley, fair, man. I be the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Beachland, Wilpen, Tunnelton, Conestoga, Bakerton, Curry Run, Smoke Run, Sanatoga, Slickville, Smithville, Flicksville, Maxtoni, Youngwood, Edgewood, Hopwood, Punxsutawney, Whitehall, Blue Ball, Center Hall, North Pole, Delano, Renovo, Laredo, let's go. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley, spare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Stump Creek, Penns Creek, Pine Creek, Chambersburg, Middle Creek, Blakeslee, Falls Creek, Shepherdsburg, Johnstown, Allentown, Shepherdstown, Lords Valley, Daisytown, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Row, Swissvale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela, oh well. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley, spare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man.